Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
Well, the Trump administration well underway into that first 100-day magical period people seem to think about, at least ever since Reagan's days. We want to do a little analysis of some of the later things that have gone on. Joining me is Republican strategist on WGN-TV, WGN Radio, Beyond the Beltway. You see him everywhere, and it's our good friend Chris Roebling. And Chris, thank you for a few moments of your time to talk.
It's great to be with you, Paul, as always. Thank you.
I'm not sure where to start, but let's start with the pandemonium of the past weekend, triggered by what the president himself called a ban, although then they've walked that back saying, no, it's not a ban. And yet people are getting held up, Chris, whether they have green cards, different things. The implementation of whatever it is this president was trying to have happen sure seemed to be a bit messy.
Yeah, you know, first of all, immigration law is a particularly challenging area. I don't need to tell you, but I mean, for the listeners, it's one of the most challenging areas because of there are big federalism issues about, you know, the federal government and the states. There are also very big equal protection issues, very big due process issues, and a lot of this stuff is murky and unclear, and so you've got your whole constitutional side on the one hand, you've got the statutory side on the other. And so now the president has waded into this, and with this 445 on Friday afternoon document, and I think that, you know, legally there's going to be conversation. He has sparked conversation, legal arguments for years to come, and eventually getting to the Supreme Court, about which we're going to hear more shortly, you know, this very day that we're recording this. But on the administration side, there's no question that this was poorly rolled out. And I have said, and I truly believe, that this means Trump now has a very significant question of competence, which he's going to have to keep an eye on. I have said, Paul, and I don't mean to run on here, but just very quick, I've said that he's got questions with conflicts of interests. He's got questions about impulse control. He's got questions about details and facts. To that, I now add the question of competence, because this was incompetently rolled out on a Friday when it was obvious that a lot of the folks who should have been involved in combobulating this strategy were actually handed a piece of paper on Friday afternoon told, this is the new program, go with it.
So you're sounding more critical than I've heard you in a long time of this president, Chris. Are you having second thoughts, or are you just having moments of frustration as the term begins to roll out?
I never endorsed him, and I didn't vote for him, and I've tried to be, consistent and, you know, support him when I think he does something right and point it out when he does something crazy. And, you know, immigration is an area where this indicates to me, notwithstanding the fact that they've got some congressional staffers involved, they got some prominent former federal officials like Rudy Giuliani, Andrew McCarthy, there's some people in there who knew or who know better than what happened. And unfortunately, this gives the implacable opposition grist for the mill of, you know, this guy's a dictator in lamb's clothing, or this guy is a narcissist and he's a lunatic and it's only a matter of time before he gets impeached. And goes out. I mean, if you don't understand the complexities of applying immigration law such that you do this early in your term, then I think, you know, people are going to say, what's really going on here? Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that this was an aberration. And one thing we can say, I hope he'll say this, he has shown an extraordinary devotion to executing his promises. I mean, unlike anything that we've ever seen before.
He's doing it. He's meeting his promises. He's doing it quickly. But the other thing that seems to be happening, Chris, as you're following this as well, is that, you know, in these recent decisions, folks who should have been involved in it, and you indicated this, were not. Even people like General Mattis seemed to be blindsided about what was going on. But of more concern, We now know that he has put Steve Bannon, who is just a political guy, whether you agree with him or not, he's a political guy. He makes him part of the inner sanctum when it comes to national security decisions, moving folks like the chief, Joint Chiefs of Staff head away from the table, even though they backpedaled it, saying, well, he can sit there if he wants to. It's as though he trusts the people around him that he trusts, but these are life and death decisions being made. We just had the exercise that happened in Yemen, lost a service person. There's some talk as to how well that operation got executed and what clarity that was. You have to have concerns about who he's allowing to advise himself in these life or death international security situations.
Well, I think that's right, and I think he has to accept the fact that because he has no government experience, you know, whatever you want to think about Joe Biden, you could say, well, by the time Joe Biden became a vice president, right, and by the time he had gotten his briefing about the nuclear codes, God forbid anything should happen to Barack Obama, Joe Biden had been the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He had been in, you know, 110 capitals overseas. He'd met early heads of state, heads of government, et cetera, et cetera. Excuse me. Hillary Clinton came out of the State Department. Whatever else you can say about Hillary, she knows, she understands how the federal government works. Donald Trump, real estate developer, big building builder, licensor of his name, things like that, not in the governmental area, not in the national security area.
And yet he surrounded himself with some pretty good generals. That's my point. People got comfort with who he was surrounding himself by, but now appears to not be taking their advice very much.
Well, and I do want to say, and I don't know Bannon. I know people who know him and things, but I want to say this: I believe that the constitutional basis for what he did with respect to Bannon and the National Security Council is the following: the founders, in their wisdom, gave Congress the sole authority to take us to war through a declaration, and the importance of that is it's a political question. Anything going to Congress is a political question. So presidents need a political understanding of what they're doing overseas. Now, having said that, the national security issue is not in and of itself a political question. It is ultimately military, and that's why I cannot understand the apparent demotion of the military guys, so that they're only going to be brought in, quote, you know, when necessary. What doesn't affect military? One other quick point. The Director of National Intelligence, DNI, who is kind of a construct of the end of Bush and beginning of Obama era, when there was a lot of discord over these things, you know, he has been sent down. And I don't think that's a good idea either, because you need intelligence at the table for all national security discussions.
We see other things going on. This is perhaps a smaller deal in terms of international impact, but the statement that White House issued on National Holocaust Memorial Day, where there was no mention of Jews killed in the Holocaust. And of course, you know, the Trump administration never apologizes for anything, so you're never going to get it was an oversight. We do know they had available to them previous statements from the Obama or Bush administrations. And indeed, Ryan Priebus on the various talk shows indicated that, yes, it was an intentional decision. I'm not sure it was, but now they say it was, so okay. It was an intentional decision not to mention Jews because many people were killed in the Holocaust. And of course, theirs was a message of unity. That was a blunder, Chris.
Oh, if nothing else, I want to be understood as a true blue supporter of Israel and the independence, the integrity, and the viability of the Jewish state. And this to me is a massive disappointment. And I don't understand how this relates to the whole issue of Jared Kushner and the fact that all of Trump's grandchildren are themselves now Jewish, and for the White House, for goodness sake, to miss this very elemental distinction in the conversation about the mass murderers known as the Nazis, the second most murderous regime of the 20th century after the Soviet Union and China, the communists. But for the mass murderers known as the Nazis, there is a reason why we talk about the Holocaust with respect to the Jews, but we never, ever forget the murder of the gypsies, or the murder of the gays, or the murder of the disabled, or the murder of the politically inconvenient. And we understand that. But when you use the term Holocaust, in and of itself, that's about the Jewish mass murder and the attempt to extinguish the Jewish race from Europe. So I'm not going to be satisfied on that one until they issue another proclamation.
Which probably isn't going to happen, but of course, now, no. Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, he, prior to the inauguration, seemed to be totally thrilled about working with this administration. But it raises question, when something like that happens, and there's been a lot of backlash from the Jewish community, do you overcome that? Or do you, because listen, Sean Spicer said in a briefing, you know, Israel's never had a better friend than Donald Trump. It just seems to be, they, depending on the day, they don't know what page they're on.
It's too early for Sean Spicer to ask anyone to make a conclusion about who his best friend Donald Trump is, unless you're talking about some guy he went to grade school with. I mean, you cannot claim on week two or day nine or whatever the heck it is that, you know, this guy has to be taken as or has to be understood as the best friend of the farmer, the best friend of, you know, the businessman, the best friend of the Israel or of NATO or anything else. It's too early. So Spicer's not well taken on that issue, and I agree with you. I mean, there's an inchoate, if I may use the word, there's an inchoate element to the evolution of public pronouncement statements, actions, which is, for the moment, you know, maybe we're going to overlook it because it's the first 8 days, as I say, 9 days. On the other hand, if this doesn't get alleviated, if this doesn't sort of burn off in the daytime sun, the morning, you know, this is the morning mist to burn off, we're going to be pretty concerned about what exactly is going, what to expect from the White House.
What concerns do you have as well as you see international relationships developing? As you know, the president of Mexico cuts off his trip, which then Trump says that was mutual, but I think that was only because of a tweet Trump issued.
You know, Paul, look, for Trump to say, we need to, and as you know, and we've talked about this offline, and I'm a student of Russian history, and I don't want to get my feet stuck in the concrete of Russian history. But let me just say real quick, for him to say it's vitally important for the U.S. and Russia to get along, at a very significant geostrategic level, he's absolutely right. There's no question about it. If we get along, things are going to be better than if we don't get along. That's almost axiomatic. But where's that insight relative to something like our neighbor, Mexico, right? Our neighbor immediately, our border neighbor, Mexico. Are we supposed to bend over backwards relative to Russia and ignore Mexico? And then when you take something like the immigration, I mean, as you know, I'm a PR guy and right. I deal a lot with public messages. For him to do this immigration thing so half-assed, if I may use that term on your exalted podcast.
You just did.
If he's going to be so half-assed about the immigration, he has to understand that one of the detriments is going to be what we've seen out of Europe. India is horrified. I'm sorry. Italy is horrified. Yeah. France is horrified. Merkel is horrified.
Canada, our neighbor to the north, is horrified.
Canada is horrified. And so where does this put this gauzy sense of let's be nice to Putin and Russia? Because that's important. Well, is it not important for us to at least act in a understandable way for our closest allies, people like Mexico, Canada, and the rest of NATO? The other thing is this. Yeah. As long as you asked, I have to tell you this. We have to really, really be present in Asia. He pulled us out of TPP, and, you know, if you're going to come out of TPP, you've got to balance that both in terms of immediate, intense, devoted bilateral diplomacy towards the bilateral trading agreements that he apparently favors. Fair enough. That's his call as president. But you also have got to be present militarily so that Singapore, Australia, Japan, South Korea, right. The Philippines, that they all know they're not being forgotten. And so this is created. You know, Singapore's in a very important struggle with Hong Kong, and the entire region
right.
is looking very closely at China and over their shoulder at the U.S. And where is the U.S.? And is the U.S. really committed to their independence and integrity? We have been. But where does that stand today?
Just one final question.
Those are concerns.
Yeah, and I understand that. And again, here I am. People listening probably think at this point, you know, is he a Democrat or Republican? But you are a Republican strategist. But I want to ask you a question for the Democrats, if I may. You can see, there's protests in the streets. I mean, you see what's going on in this country. In many ways, to me, I feel like we're starting to get back to the 60s and the 70s. I hope that doesn't happen, but sometimes you get that sense. But Democrats also don't have the votes to stop anything. Even when asked, Tim Kaine was on one of the morning shows and asked, "What are you going to do?" And he said, "Well, we're going to approach. We're going to let them know how unhappy we are," because there's really nothing Democrats can do. But out of curiosity, for even you as a Republican, if he continues to just do things that have you shake your head in bewilderment, is this what life is like for the next 4 years? Or is there anything that, if there were a loyal opposition, you would say, here's what you need to do to stop this stuff?
Well, the Democrats are their own failure, and it is profound, and it is getting worse, and I think they're becoming an irrelevancy at the national level. And that's a story that started in 1972. But it was continuing as recently as yesterday. These Democrats are going out talking about the Muslim ban and the Muslim ban. They don't understand that every time they go on TV decrying the Muslim ban, which this is not. Whatever else you want to say about it, this is not a ban on Muslims.
Well, because there's other countries not included. We can get into that. That's another. Let's hold that discussion up, and let me just get your advice for detractors.
The Democrats are facing, in their role, and the congressional Democrats are unable to mount a challenge that actually stops one of Trump's cabinet secretaries. Fair enough, that's their problem. Now, at the DNC, at the Democratic National Committee level, they're arguing over theories of white privilege, theories of privilege hoarding. I mean, I believe they are outdoing themselves to become politically irrelevant to the mainstream of American political life. If I was to say one thing to them, I would say, choose your battles, know your opposition, and try like heck to win on the battle that you select. But if they go at this thing of, we're opposing them on everything all day, every day, I believe they are marginalizing themselves and diminishing their influence.
It was a strategy that did work for the Republicans, but it's not one I don't think they can match. I agree with you on that. Republican strategist Chris Roebling for WGN Radio, TV, everywhere else, my show. Always good to see you, and thanks for spending some time with me on the podcast, Chris. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you, Paul.
Talk to you soon.
3-4!
All right, that is some great music from the musical Urinetown, which is playing over at Boho Theater. It's something you got to check out. I've been a fan of Urinetown. It played off-Broadway. Actually, I think it was on Broadway, too, or maybe just off, for years and years in New York. And it is back here in Chicago, but being put on by really one of the great Chicago theaters, the Boho Theater Company. And joining me to talk all about not just Urinetown, which you'll get to see, but also upcoming shows in the Boho Theater season, is one of the directors and an artistic associate for the Boho Theater. Stephen Shellhart is with me, and one of the stars of Urinetown. She plays the character of Little Sally, and if you know the show Urinetown, you know exactly who that is, and her name is Ariana Burke. Stephen, Ariana, welcome to the podcast. Appreciate you.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having us.
So, Stephen, let me start with you. Let's talk a little bit about the Boho Theater. It may be one that, you know, there's theater companies in town and the people aren't familiar with it. You've done such great stuff. I mean, the Full Monty, and there's just some, you guys have selected such great shows, some coming up in this season as well. What's the overall mission of Boho? What are you trying to provide the community?
Sure. Well, I came on board with Boho about a year ago because I love exactly what you said. I love this company. I love it because it Boho's mission is sort of to create bold theater that challenges convention with innovative ways of storytelling. But really what we're about is uniting artist and audience in the examination of truth, beauty, freedom, and love through sort of the lens of human relationships. We value thoughtful, well-examined relationships, and we think connection to other humans is our highest priority in our lives. So all the art we do focuses on sort of those four pillars, truth, beauty, freedom, and love, through the lens of human connection.
Wow, it sounds like you should write a brochure like that. I think I've read that. So that's great stuff, and that is what you guys are about, and that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And so we kick off this new season, the 2017 season, with Urinetown, which opens February 4th, playing through March 26th over at Stage 773, because you guys move around a little bit. So that one is at Stage 773 on Belmont, 1227 West Belmont. Ariana, you play the role of Little Sally. I've seen the show countless times, going to come see you guys do it. But there are people who don't exactly know what Urinetown is, and to be honest with you, the title of the musical could be a little off-putting. So give people some comfort. Tell us what this show is all about and why the title of the show shouldn't scare them away.
Well, Urinetown is about, well, it's a town, yes, and people cannot pee for free, so they have to pay to pee. And our little area, the rebels were a bunch of poor people in the neighborhood, and our leader, Bobby, he kind of starts a revolution against the corporations that are making us have to pay to pee, because it becomes very unfair, and it's just, it's a great, 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 great show. It's very, it's a satirical comedy about that.
The book is by Greg Kotas, and Mark Hallman wrote the music. I just love it. I mean, it's one of those shows when you hear the music, just like the song we played a little bit of, Run, Freedom, Run. It's one of those that sticks in your head. And, Stephen, you know, the plot sounds a little goofy. It's a town. They charge you to pee, whatever. But I've always looked at Urinetown and thought there actually is – it could be silly at one level, but the truth is, and especially one would argue in the way society sometimes can be seen these days, there's a pretty deep – much deeper message to that show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I mean, every single day now I feel like the show's becoming more relevant and important to do. But I did – I saw Urinetown a few months – after it opened on Broadway, I saw it in November of 2001. So it was shortly after September 11th. And, you know, it was a time when I think a lot of people were going through, were angry and confused about sort of what was happening in the world. And this musical, for me, I mean, the title was very off-putting. I didn't quite understand what it was going to be about. But when I saw it, it was hilariously funny. And I think it came at a time when people were sort of yearning for laughter and a little irreverence. But at the underneath it was dark and poignant, and it made very bold statements about our political system. You know, it's a show that sort of deals with the fundamental battle of basic human rights. It deals with political corruption and corporate greed and mistrust and fear of the law enforcement and overpopulation and economic disasters. But really at the core, it's about a revolution, about sort of unexpected, unlikely voices finding strength and power as one and rising up. And I think that's what sort of drew me to the show, especially now with what's happening in our world. It just it's really an amazing kind of complex musical that, yes, is hilariously funny and has a really great musical and pays sort of homage to all the classic musical theater form and structure. And, you know, it tips its hat at Guys and Dolls, West Side Story, Les Mis, and all of the sort of musicals that we'd recognize. But underneath, it really does have a lot to say about the world.
Ariana, you play Little Sally, and so it would sound like you're like a little kid. You're not a little kid, but and you've got Officer Lockstock. I remember on Broadway, Hunter Foster. Played the role of Bobby. Got your head in the clouds, Bobby, and he was great. Tell me a little bit, Ariana, about some of the cast members and who joined you in playing that role of Bobby, and how great everybody is in this show.
Everyone is wonderful. It's such a joy to work on this show. Henry McGinnis, who is our Bobby, he's just phenomenal. He's so talented and amazing, and he really helps to, we all help to carry the show, but he definitely plays his part in being our leader and the person that we follow and that we respect and look up to. And everyone in the cast, it's such phenomenal casting. Stephen and the team have done such a great job of putting such great Chicago actors together. Like, we all work well together. It's so great. It's such a great experience.
By the way, I know that you also played Little Inez in Hairspray. Do you have this thing about playing little people in shows? What's the...
I think so. I'm a very tiny person. I'm only 4'11", so...
So you're, it's always, well, there's a role in West Side Story for you as well. Anybody's, we'll get you that role too. Coming up. Hey, so it's going to play, as I said, February 4th through March 26th over at State 773 on Belmont. So that is convenient for folks who live in the city. Stephen, let's walk through the balance of the season though, because in May, you guys take a little break. And then in May, you have the incredible show, 3 Days of Rain by Richard Greenberg. And he, of course, is known for so many wonderful shows. Take Me Out and talk to me a little bit about 3 Days of Rain and what we're in for.
Yeah, well, it's a great season, you know, because Boho does a mixture of plays and musicals.
And Urinetown being such a big musical at Stage 773, we wanted our next show to be more intimate and bring it back to our home space at the Heartland Studio in Rogers Park. But yeah, 3 Days of Rain, it's a great play. It deals with family secrets and how sort of children grow up to sort of embody their parents in a way. We try to fight growing into the similarities of our our elders, but we find that when we get to be adults that there's a lot more of our parents in ourselves, and it's a beautiful play, a four-person play, and it's going to be at the Heartland Studio. That's May through July.
Yeah, May 18th through July 2nd, and the Heartland Studio is a little bit further north than the other one, 7016 North Glenwood is where that is. We're going to give people the website, too, so they can check. Well, what the hell? What am I waiting for? They can get tickets and check you out at bohotheater.com, B-O-H-O theater. And you spell theater the proper way. Always impressed when theater companies spell it R-E and not E-R, because E-R is so plebeian, isn't it?
It is.
Totally R.E. Ariana, I don't know if you're probably not going to be in 3 Days of Rain, but you could play one of the kids who becomes embodies their parents.
I would love to.
Okay, I'm just trying
to
get Stephen to cast you in that next one. And, and then we move on to
I would cast Ariana in anything.
You can tell she should be in everything. Maybe this next one. Marie Christine, October 21st to December 10th, you're back at Theater Wit. When I say back at Theater Wit, you're back in that same complex over there, this time 1229 West Belmont. And my memory of that show, this is all about Marie Laveau. This is voodoo stuff. This is New Orleans stuff, right?
Yep. Yeah, it is. It's sort of inspired by Madea and deals with dark magic. And but it is. It's based on her life. And, it's great music, John Lacusa. And it's going to be directed by Lillianne Brown, who's a fantastic director in this city. She's right now about to direct The Wiz for Coke Candy. So, again, it's dark, but it has it's a really great sort of story and has great music. So we're really excited to do it, especially with Lillianne at the helm.
And I said, I've always been excited about Boho when I first even came across you guys years ago and the work you do. But Ariana, let me ask you, because you've worked at Drury Lane, you've worked at the Paramount Theater, so many different places. Can you identify what is there that's distinct and we'll say special about working with Boho?
The community, the feeling of family, I feel like that's very different from a lot of other theaters in the city and all around that. Boho really makes all of their actors very comfortable, and we're all, we just all work together so well. I think that the theater is just so special in what they do and the stories that they tell and the way they go about telling their stories. It's so unique and just so special.
And that it is. And so the season is about to get underway. Again, I can't emphasize Urinetown. When I saw you were doing Urinetown, I actually contacted you guys as soon as that came out and said, I need to be talking to folks about this. Because, again, for folks who have never seen this show, it is such a surprise and treat. It's just whatever it is you might be thinking, it probably is not what you're thinking. Yet it is very, very great fun to see. And once again, I want to encourage people, they can get tickets. They can check it out at bohotheater.com, spelled the right way. T-R-E at the end. And I look forward to seeing you guys. I'm certainly going to be there and get to see you. And I'll hopefully see you after the show and say hi to you. Stephen, Ariana, I thank you for your time and encourage everybody to check out the Boho Theater, especially Urinetown, and then check out the other shows that are coming up. Thank you, guys.
You
I appreciate
so much.
It.
Thank
yes,
you.
Check us out.
All right. Break a leg there.
Thank you.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's P-A-U-L-L-I-S-N-E-K. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.